Welcome to the Gay Buddhist Forum, where teachers from all schools of Buddhism offer their perspectives on the Dharma and its application in modern times, especially for LGBTQI audiences. These talks are offered freely to the world and made possible by appreciative listeners. If you would like to support our efforts to share the Dharma with underserved audiences, please visit gaybuddhist.org. There you can donate, find a list of upcoming speakers, or enjoy many hundreds of these recorded talks dating back to 1996.
Well, welcome back, everyone. Everyone's getting settled again for our speaker. We ordinarily go around the room and introduce ourselves by our names, and if you feel like adding anything extra to that, or a talk for the day, you're welcome as well. And before we do that, I'll ask, are there any people who are new here for the first time and are back after a long absence? Okay, so if some of the regulars could take note of those people's names and go make them welcome afterwards, that would be great. We'll have about a 40-minute talk by our speaker today, who I'll introduce in a minute. Then after that, there'll be some refreshments and socializing afterwards until about 12:30. And there'll be more about that after the talk. So let's go around and introduce ourselves. My name is Chris.
Bob Hampton.
Andre.
Philip.
Peter.
Patrick.
My name is John.
I'm Bill.
Joe.
I'm Kay.
Bill.
Marvin.
Larry.
Jack.
Ian.
Richard.
Rod.
John.
Jerry.
Ray Dyer.
Peter.
Lee Robbins.
My name is Tage.
Doug Boncos.
Richard.
And Tom.
David Axel.
My name is Heather.
My name is Harley.
Jerry.
Harvey.
Takwan.
Jim.
My name is Don.
Robert.
I'm Roy.
George.
Tom Dwyer.
Okay.
My name is Howard Deport.
My name is Reggie.
Robert.
David.
My name is Gary.
My name is Michael.
My name is Tony.
Didn't miss anyone. Well, our speaker today is Karen Van Dyne. She has connected with the San Francisco Gay community since 1985 as part of the Radiant Light Ministries. She's also been involved with the San Francisco Healing Circle and RLM, and she's studied at the Tassajara Zen Center and has worked with Thich Nhat Hanh to found the Living Peace Meditation Community in 1993. Through her many years of meditation, she has deepened her personal practice, insight, and compassion. She has profound heart connection with the gay community. The topic of her Dharma talk will be... I'm getting closer to 40. will be shadow dancing in and out of hiding with our true nature.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for inviting me to your beautiful Sangha. It's a deep pleasure to be here this morning. And like you, I'll be in and out of glasses. So I think my first, one of the most heartfelt introductions to the gay community happened early in the mid-80s. My daughter and I went to our first Pride Parade. I was astounded. I was almost in tears. I'm getting chills right now remembering it. Seeing everyone, all the different contingents from the dykes on bikes through the square dancing guys and the leather men. And I was just, it was like I was being shown the vision of being yourself. Not only the freedom to be yourself, but to celebrate that. And it's like, oh my God, look what they do here. not only do they do it personally, but they get out in the street and they march and they enjoy the celebration of their being. And I thought, this place is for me. I feel like I've been living in hiding so much of my life. And my heart just opened. And I feel like I came home. A big part of me came home to this community. Over time, I finally moved here. It took me a while. And as Chris said, I became part of the Radiant Light Ministries, another very far out, wild celebration of who you are, but another important part on my spiritual journey. And when I was talking with Howard about sharing with you guys, it just came to me, you guys have come out, you know, how extraordinary you are. That you have come out of a shadow, that you have come out of what might have been, I'm sure, very difficult early beginnings into who you are. And that's one step in the journey, but what a magnificent step you've taken. And how much your Sangha, your community, supports you in doing that. And when I look back at my life, we all have stories. You know, I remember being a small little girl, maybe in the second grade, maybe in the third grade. I remember being in the backyard and being so mad at God. I was furious. It was like, what have you done? Where was the mix-up? How did I get here in so much pain? This life is so hard. There's so much hate. I must have done something so horribly wrong to be punished, to be put in this place. And those deep feelings of suffering came to me very, very early in my life. And at first, it's very easy. It's like, it's my parents, whatever. I find that all of the suffering in my life has been what has brought me into inquiry, insight, seeking, wanting to know. It's been this major catalyst, this major motivator to seek my personal wholeness. So when I was thinking of coming here, it's, what is this shadow? And what is it about? And how do we come out? And how do we live with it? And through my life, you know, various dramas, like everybody, you know, depression, suicide attempts, and every difficulty found me propelled into the next level of inquiry, into the next level of going within, into the next level of asking the questions and trying to find the answers. It took me through lots of psychology, therapy, personal growth. When I look back at, you know, shamanism, psychic healing, angelic realms, energy bodies, Reiki, nutrition, you know, whatever was coming up, I reached to find it. And I see now that that was a perfect tapestry for my unfolding. That every part of it was a piece of the puzzle. So recently, and I have wonderful dialogues with a very dear friend of mine, and of course with my own Sangha. And a few weeks ago, I was once again asking myself, what is the nature of all of this? What is the nature of the shadow? What is the nature of the ego? How do we get here? What is this about? And I just came to some deeper understandings. You know, sometimes you learn something cognitively, but it's not really yours until you have a personal awareness and then it becomes yours. So I was thinking about life and how when we're born as little children, there's this amazing innocence. There's this incredible beauty and connectedness. Then what happens? Where does that go? Why don't we remain in that beautiful state? And I think what happens is, as we become a little older, we begin to experience separation. We begin to feel the suffering of separation. I remember years ago, before I became a Buddhist, I was in Mill Valley at the Mill Valley Depot. And I picked up this book on Buddhism, and I opened it, and the first thing I read was, "Life is suffering." I thought, "Oh!" Slammed the book, put it back on the shelf. Who wants to know that? I want the angelic realms. I want to just bliss out of here, you know. Suffering? But I think that's what happens to us when we are infants, when we're little children. First we get separated from mommy, and then the world opens up. So what do we do? What is actually happening is we are entering the dual nature of being a body. We're entering the dual nature of reality. And we are experiencing our small self. We are experiencing our separation from all that is. And we don't know what to do with it. It's like, how do you cope with feeling separate, abandoned from source, cut off from love, nurturance, whatever it is that we feel? So as little ones, we start creating things like an identity, like a strategy for the way we're going to deal with the pain of being in this dual nature. So we develop identities and we develop strategies. And what's fascinating is as you study many things through your life, you realize that all people do this, and that there are certain even archetypes or strategies that are so well known that many people do the same kind. So, but back to what do we do? Okay, we start creating ways to survive. An identity. For example, I really, really believed that if I was a good girl, that life would be good to me. And I kept trying harder and harder to be perfect, to be good, to do it right. And I developed very clear ideas about what was right and what was wrong. So what I was doing was building my identity as a separate self. I was building the little I am. And I think a few weeks ago when I had these insights, we spend the greater part of our life building this identity, building these strategies, building these patterns, because we think they're going to work. We pray they're going to work. So we get more and more in a groove with it. We believe it more. Those patterns get so deeply ingrained within us. And we really believe that our salvation lies within those identities. And then we defend those identities. I'm right, you're wrong. My way is the way. And we get reactive in defense of those identities. We do everything to prove, to show, to guard those identities that we have, because that's how I'm going to be okay, if I can really be good, or whatever it is that you create, whatever that identity is. And as we go along, you know, it doesn't work. We find with great distress that it doesn't work. I don't know if any of you have ever had a relationship and the same one again with a different person and the same one again with a different person and etc. We keep trying to do it in the same way and it doesn't work. So after a while, if we sometimes suffering is what motivated me, I think, perhaps grace, whatever, we come to that point where we realize that we are kind of in charge of some of this. It's like we have choice. That one astounded me. That one I grappled with for years. Choice? I don't have choice. I'm a victim. This was all done to me. There's no way I can do anything about it. You know, it's other people's fault. The fact that, oh, I am choosing this, what a thought. So I started to move out of being reactive into having choice and becoming responsive and responsible. It's a very different thing. Rather than defending and reacting, to becoming responsible. And then I can start to see the true nature of the patterns that I believe. It's not fun, it's not pretty, it's not something you want to do, but you start taking responsibility. You guys have all done that. At some point, you realized that you were gay men. You suffered greatly. However you were trying to work didn't work. You took responsibility. I am gay. I am an addict. I am proving. I have this identity. I'm using this pattern. I own that that's what I do. Then more insight starts to come. And one of the hardest insights for me is to know that I have this thing called an ego or a conditioned mind, and guess what? It ain't going away. I have this thing called a shadow. Guess what? It ain't going away. As long as I'm here in a body, I live in a dual nature. Oh my. Now what do I do? How do you live with that? There are many things we do. Let's distract, let's get busy, let's have an addiction, let's work hard, let's do anything to keep from feeling what's really going on. So, first I'd like to go back a bit to things like reaction and judgment and pain. We, in this culture especially, we polarize things so much. They're good things and they're bad things. And I find the truth is when I have a judgment, especially a strong judgment about someone else or a situation, the truth is that's usually me. There's nobody out there in a way. You know, if I judge someone as being a certain way and I have a lot of energy on it, 90% of the time, that's me. It's a part of me that isn't developed. It's a part of me that's fearful. It's a part of me, but it's a part of me. If I have a reaction, it is a gift because it is showing me where I'm not whole yet. Just like pain. Pain is going, hello, knock, knock, pay attention. Something's out of balance here. I believe that reactive states and states of judgment are also like pain. Hello, pay attention. Hello, drop in deeper. Hello, see what's going on here. I think the same thing is true for the shadow. In truth, I really believe that the shadow is like this golden gift. Because I know already what I know. It's what I don't know that messes me up. It's what I don't know. It's what I haven't embraced. It's what I haven't seen that is really messing me up. Have any of you ever had the experience where you state an intention and you're going to create something and you keep creating from another place, like that little child within you makes things happen instead of you making them happen? Our shadow creates all the time. What do we do about that? The truth is, in my belief, that our shadow is the unknown, orphaned part. And it is our desire of our heart that we have wholeness. We are committed to coming back to our true nature. There's a part inside of us that is so committed to wholeness, is so committed to our true nature, that it brings us into suffering. So we can see that this part is orphaned, that this part has been shut out. And suffering is like a small pain that's gotten bigger. It just goes, hello, I'm here. I'm here. But it's really the path to freedom. It's the path to the greatest freedom. And, you know, I think for me, it's like, okay, I'll live in a dual nature if I can just live on the plus side of it, okay? You know, I'll just be on the good side. Okay, and I'm just going to do everything I can so I'm on that feel-good place. Well, folks, the middle way is in the middle. It's in the middle between the shadow and the light. I was with Thich Nhat Hanh the day after 9/11, a big lecture he gave in Berkeley. And he was asked many questions. And at one point he said, I would not live in a world without suffering. And we all went, huh? He said, because if I lived in a world without suffering, there would be no compassion. If we lived in a world of light, there would be no darkness. You know, we have darkness as such a bad rap. It's so important. Think of the seasons and the cycles. We need them all. So how do we start dancing with that shadow? How do we start embracing that shadow? The other thing that we have all the time is this thing called this ego. Oh, it's so much fun. This conditioned mind. Have you noticed it? I mean, today mine was just having a field day. Mine yesterday too. I was teaching in a new place, and so, you know, you hear how awful you are, how bad you are, how late you are. Okay, what is ego trying to do? Ego's whole job is to keep us in the small separate self. It's trying to keep us safe. But it's trying to keep us in the small, separate self. So in truth, if you can hear your ego speaking, it's a liar. Everything it says is not true. But the tricky part is learning to hear it. And it speaks with such authority. And it speaks with such logic. You know, if you just did this and this and that. Right. So part of the trick is learning to hear that voice of ego, so that we can separate ourselves. I love the way Thich Nhat Hanh thinks about it. He calls it his habit energy. So he will just say, "Oh, hello, my habit energy," and go on with his life. If we can get to a place where we're not as meshed with ego and we're more separate, we can watch it arise, because it will arise until the day we leave this body. We can watch it arise and say, "Oh, hello, thanks for sharing. I'm coming back to what is my true nature. I'm coming back to what is higher." So given these challenges of living in a dual nature, you know, what can we possibly do? How can we survive? You're already involved in one of the most important things, and that is a sangha, a community. One time Thich Nhat Hanh was asked of the three jewels, the Dharma, the Buddha, the sangha, what is the most important one? He said, if you have a sangha, if you have a community, you have all three. Because all three are interwoven with each other. If you have a sangha, the teachings, the Dharma are there. The Buddha is there. The most important thing we need is loving support. Because to find our way through the shadow, through the ego, you know, we get lost. And it's very helpful to share our personal experience, so that it's like, oh, we wake up. The other thing I love about my perception of Buddhism, Thich Nhat Hanh says, we can, you know, don't be a teacher. Don't tell someone how to do it. Buddhism is an invitation to experience things, to use tools, an invitation to your own insight, to your own truth, to your own nature. So it's not about doing what we did when we created a false self, which was saying, oh, if I do this, if I follow this rigid pattern, I'll be okay. Because we're not a rigid pattern. We are a dynamic flow of energy, perceptions, thoughts. So the first gift that we have to deal with suffering and ego and the shadow is our sangha. The other one, some of the other ones are cultivating mindfulness. Practicing sitting and calming and stopping and slowing down, so that we can listen, so that we can hear deeply and understand. All of us have a story. And you know how fun it is to have a story. Because it's, and you wouldn't believe, and what that story does a number of things. There's so much pressure on us from the suffering. And if we share that dramatic a little bit, it kind of takes the lid off the pressure of the suffering, kind of dissipates it. So we can just go on as we were. So what happens? We just keep going on as we were. If we just live in the story part of our existence, we still have excuses. We still are victimized. We haven't dropped down into the depth of it where transformation happens. Who wants to do that? You know, I'd rather say my story and have an excuse and go on with my life. But it's only when we have the willingness to drop down deeper that transformation and freedom happen. That's why we practice meditation. That's why we practice insight. That's why we practice awareness. That's why we develop this core of being that sustains us when we drop into the deeper work of transformation. It's not easy stuff. So, excuse me for a second. I've done well, and then I got lost for a half a second. The other thing that I find is so extraordinarily helpful is practicing present moment awareness, which is another way of mindfulness. In this present moment right now, if we practice coming back to this present moment right now, that's a lot of the work that we do in our group or a mindfulness meditation group. But it's like while you are eating, you are eating. While you are driving the car, you are right here. You're not down there and around the corner. You know, you're not ahead of yourself or behind of yourself. You're just right here in the present moment. And I'm finding that that is where my liberation is. Because developing that core of calm, that core of interconnectedness, and that core of mindfulness, it's like being able to sit in the eye of a hurricane. Right now, I can sit calmly, I can breathe, my heart can be open and happy, and everything around me is still happening. All the conditions in my life are there, but I am right here, centered in the moment. And I can be responsive. I can be aware. I can notice my life without being lost in suffering. So the cultivation of mindfulness and of insight is really, really key. Because then we can drop down below the story. We can go below the story to the place where I'm afraid, I'm abandoned, I'm lost, I'm powerless. And we learn there, through mindfulness, to be able to sit with those things that are so terrifying. Not to even change them. Mindfulness is learning to touch with our awareness. It's like if you had a pain in your leg. Normally we go, oh, I want to change the pain. I want to get rid of the pain. Touching is more like touching it and going, I know that there's pain there. I'm not going to try and change it. I'm just going to bring my loving awareness to it. If I bring my loving awareness to it, if I allow myself to see it fully, I develop my compassion and my understanding, and I can be so present with it. I think for me, most of this journey is about courage. And courage comes from our heart. French word for heart is cœur. It's our love that is so powerful. It is so willing. It is so willing to see what is unseen. It's so willing to touch the sore. It's willing to touch the cancer. It's willing to touch the abandonment. Not by wanting to change it and fix it, but to open our heart in such love that we just bring our awareness to it. We allow ourselves to feel it. We allow ourselves to experience it. And we do it by holding it. and loving kindness. We do it by embracing it. And this is where transformation happens, and this is where we discover our true nature. We discover that there's no separation. Long ago, in the 80s sometime, I was getting into the bathtub, and I somehow flashed into a past life. Don't ask me how. And I was just aware of looking up, and there was a high window, and I saw a light coming out of the window. And I followed the light. It was shining down on me, and I was sitting like in a dungeon, and I was starving to death. And my reaction and feeling were, oh, I'm starving to death. No energy, just what is. I was fine. I was starving to death. I was fine. That's the other thing we learn in meditation. What is actually happening? And we bring that loving kindness. We bring that heart to embrace it. And it's just, that's what is. It's not good. It's not bad. It's just what is. We open and we embrace that. So, it's pretty exciting. But in a day, I will go from my most deep, little, small I am patterns to sometimes a time of great awareness and awakening. And that is the dance with life and the dance with the shadow. But I think the more we can understand that the shadow is with us, that it has many gifts, that the ego is with us, what it's trying to tell us, we can find our way. If we get quiet, insightful, open our hearts, have the courage and the willingness to embrace what is. I thank you so much for letting me share. And it's such a privilege to be with all of you, because I know just by being in this room, you are already on that journey. I invite you to look back at your process of coming out as gay men, to find your strength in that, to touch back and remember what that journey was like for you, and to really feel the freedom you have, and let that be kind of as an example, an icon, something that sustains you in moving forward into even deeper awakening. Thank you very much.
We have time for question and answer. Available.
You spoke of the ego as being, its job is to keep you separate, and but the shadow is having gifts. Do you think the ego has gifts as well? Do you think they're on par?
I think they probably have a gift of awareness of our beliefs and our patterns. You know, I think we spent so much of our life developing these identities and these strategies and making them real. It's very hard to wake up to them. It's very hard to even hear our ego. So I think when we can begin to hear it, it's like, oh, okay, this is an awareness of this negative belief. This is an awareness of this untrue belief that I have. This is the place where I can bring love and go, thank you, and you're not the truth. So it's kind of like pain in that it's a gift of awareness. Thank you.
Thank you for your
Well, very moving. And I'm very afraid of an economic crisis that I'm going to be running out of money to eat in a couple of years. And from your talk, I can see how much of that fear is from my shadow self, not the situation. And that's very, very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And may we have the courage to drop down to, you know, that little child or whatever part of you. That's the other thing I love about the gay community. Think of that pride parade. You know, the leather men, the square dancers, the sisters of perpetual indulgence. Think of the diversity there. We all have that within us. We have all those diverse ways with, they're all part of us. So there's a part that's very afraid of starving or being abandoned. What do you do with that part? Shut up, go away? No. You go, okay, I love you and I'm going to just be with you. And my attention is going to comfort you. I know you're there and I love you. I love you. I'm not going to push you away. I'm going to just embrace you. You're a part of me. Let me hold you in my arms. It's okay.
Going back to your point about the pain in your leg, so I can acknowledge the pain. But when do I take the Advil? Is that the middle way?
Okay, we do. We live in multi-dimensions. You take the Advil, and you don't let that be all that you do. It's a nice exercise to just even sit with your body and just touch it. Just touch various parts and feel love coming in. Practice that nourishment instead of the fix it and go away, fix it and go away. Practice the I see you, I hear you, I'm here for you, I'm here for you.
Thank you. It's nice to see you. We did a retreat. Karen was on a retreat with me 20 years ago. She was the only woman there in a gay men's retreat.
It's fabulous. I heard recently that gay men and straight women have the same mind, the same brain. Made perfect sense to me.
It's a great opportunity to ask about how do you recognize your shadow? It's so difficult for me, you know, it works me a whole lot of the time, but I can't see it. When I'm in trouble, okay, I know it's shadow stuff, but what do you do? Do you need somebody else?
Sometimes it's helpful just to have a good, trusted friend and tell your normal story, but drop it deeper. Instead of just the same story, start to feel, I'm really afraid. Start owning the, you know, let it become emotional so that the energy is starting to move, so that you can start to feel what's underneath. This last week I had some really scary things and I was just frozen. So I started saying, oh, I'm frozen, I'm frustrated. Okay, what's underneath? What's underneath is I'm really scared. What's underneath? I feel powerless. Okay, then you're starting to touch the shadow. And then you come to the shadow with a new relationship. Again, touching it instead of just staying in the little story which keeps us away from it. Drop down farther into the feeling, into the experience, into the trauma. It's like turning to the dark. walking into the jaws of the monster. It takes a lot of courage, but that's the way through. And to do it with a trusted friend who can witness you and hear you is very helpful. You can do it if you're alone, writing, try and write until you get into the emotion. And then you're with it. Not easy, not fun. Much more fun to be a drama queen and, you know, rather than drop down and have transformation.
Any more questions?
Well, Karen, a big wow and gratitude for your presence and talking today. What came to mind is maybe an opportunity just to validate my experience of the beauty and wonder and compassion of this Sangha,
mm-hmm.
The Gay Buddhist Fellowship. And that there, I have experienced consistently here now for over 10 years, a Sangha of openness, compassion, grace. We got our stuff, but overall, the spirit here has been one of Buddha nature.
Mm.
And so I want to thank you for validating the role of Sangha in the work of being compassionate to your shadow.
Mm. Thank you.
Well, if there are no more questions, I'd like to thank Karen and Karen. And it's time for announcements. And I also have to ask, do we have a host? The host is over here.
Yes. I am the host. And there's a little bit of food. Please help yourself. And there's hot water for tea. And help yourself to that as well. And once you're done, make sure you wash your cup out with soapy, warm water, put it back in the rack. There's a donut bowl. The suggested donation is $5 to $10 to support the Sangha. And appreciate all the walk around the bowl. And there's a sign-up sheet for those who want to get on the mailing list, on the roster. That's in the credenza over here on the right. And some of us meet around 12:30 to go out for lunch. You can do that. So I think that's all of it. So.
Okay. Any other announcements?
I would just like to invite anyone who would like to join our Sangha on Thursday nights. We're small at this point, very intimate. We meet at the Unitarian Church between 7 and 8:30, and it's mindfulness meditation. It started out as a gay men's group. Now there are a few straight people there. It's small and intimate, but you're very welcome if you ever would like to join us. Thank you.
I'm Bill. I picked up the group's mail for about 3 years now, and in the spirit of rotation of service, I would like to give somebody else an opportunity to do this. That's maybe a more positive way of saying I don't want to do it anymore. I'm taking on another service position that's getting to be very time consuming. But it largely involves picking up the mail on a weekly, bi-weekly basis, and largely it consists of prison correspondence related mail, and you distribute that to whoever has that, checks for the treasurer, and then occasionally a mail that goes to the steering committee. So it's not too involved, and the mailbox is located at Market Street in Sanchez, and there are two very, very cute, adorable men that work in the post office that you get a chance to meet. So, yeah, good incentive. So please, if anyone's interested, be free to approach me.
Yes, I'm updating the GBF directory, and I have a copy out there that I'd appreciate if you'd look it over and make sure your information is as you want it to be. If you want to make corrections, please write them legibly. There's a couple of blank sheets in the back of it if you need to, you know, write your name and information separately rather than just make a correction, do that. If it's okay, put a circle around it and write okay. I'd like to get that out. We're overdue for a new
Yeah, our speaker next week is the famous Jack Moran. Jack is a PhD psychotherapist practicing here in the Bay Area for now 30 years. He's the author of a book that all of us have, I'm sure, Anal Pleasure and Health. It's actually in its fourth reprinting. It is sold around the world. My six copies are dog-eared and torn down. Jack is not a practicing Buddhist, but he will speak on sexual erotic integrity in the spirit of the precept of wholesome sexuality. Mm-hmm. And really looking forward to his presence next week. And the program committee has an opening for one more person to serve with us in the program committee. If you have a source of interest and spirit, there are many opportunities for service in the Sangha. You can talk with Bill about his opening. You can talk with me or Jerry Jones about service on the program committee.
Any more announcements? Looks like a no. Okay, so then we usually stand and form a circle.
You to take a wonderful breath. Come all the way into your body, into this wonderful moment. We open our hearts in gratitude for this wonderful Sangha. And in gratitude for all of those beings in our life who are our teachers. And in gratitude for all of those who have gone before us, lighting the way. We ask for continuing insight, inspiration, and guidance in our awakening. May we and all beings awaken to our true nature. May we and all beings walk in freedom. And may we and all beings walk in peace. And may come back to yourself and to your heart. And I invite you, as you open your eyes, to look around the room with loving kindness and seeing all of the Buddha nature in each person.
Thank you for listening to the Gay Buddhist Forum. If you would like to hear several new talks per month,
and be notified of upcoming speakers so you can participate live. Please subscribe to this podcast, like us on Facebook, and join our mailing list by visiting gaybuddhist.org.